Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio's mental health system is broken. Maybe it's always been broken to some extent, but in the late 1980s, state lawmakers enacted reforms intended to guarantee improvement by closing the large institutions and moving patients to community-based services. There's never been adequate funding for that transformation, and now we're on the brink of a collapse of Ohio's mental health treatment system. Reporters Kathy Kandisky and Alan Johnson of the Columbus Dispatch wrote about this threat in detail on October 24. They've joined us today to talk about it. Alan Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. It's good to be here.
And Kathy Kandisky, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I think, Alan, this is your first time.
No, actually, I was here once before to talk about animals, farm animals.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yes.
Another topic for another day.
Yep.
In your podcast, I listened to your podcast that you two of you starred in, you refer to the impending collapse of Ohio's mental health treatment system. What does a collapse look like? What's that going to be like for people?
Well, and for point of reference, since we've written this, we've heard from some people say it's not at the point of collapse, it has collapsed. But anyway, I think collapse in this sense means not people not getting the services they need, the funding not being there, having to wait 6 months or 7 months or even longer for a psychiatrist when you're in a critical situation, people dying, literally dying because they can't get services. That's a collapse.
This time of year, we're usually talking politics, and for sure, the National Alliance on Mental Illness has urged its followers and members to question candidates about their commitment to caring for the mentally ill. But a lot of the focus always seems to be on gubernatorial candidates. What kind of power do they have over an issue like this, Kathy?
Well, it's going to be the budget this year, obviously. The state's facing an $8 billion shortfall. It's projected $8 billion now. It might be a lot higher by the time we get into the budget after this election. And so the concern, obviously, is state aid to local communities is what makes up a lot of the services for mental health. So if state aid is cut, those services would not be as available as they are today. Now, it's worth pointing out that they were cut severely in the last budget, and that's why we're in the situation we're at, part of the reason. I mean, it's been coming more than just that. So the next governor will have a key role because he will be the first one to issue some recommendations on what that budget should look like and where cuts are going to have to be made to balance the budget.
Not only have there been cuts before this in the last, well, the last for sure, but there weren't increases in the one before that, the budget before that. And really, it was never adequately funded in the first place. So we were starting out below.
If you go back to the Mental Health Act of 1988, which is what got this all started, the idea was to close state institutions, transfer people back to the communities, have the money follow them back to the communities so that they could access services, counseling, psychiatric care, medication.
An excellent
in
idea.
The community.
An excellent idea.
Everybody thought it was a great idea. The concern then and the concern now is that the funds be in place to provide the services, because if you're not able to provide those community services, then you have a larger problem.
And
obviously,
you have all the big institutions are gone. They're not taking people in anymore like they used to. There's just nothing then.
Well, not until someone's in crisis. You know, you may have someone that can function very well on medication and maybe meeting with a counselor once a week. But if they're not getting that, then the next thing you know, things snowball, and now they are needing to be hospitalized. So it's a big problem.
And one of the things was, you were right, it was never fully funded the way it was supposed to be. I did interview former Governor Celeste. And
who was governor at the time.
Correct. And Pam Hyde, who's now the head of the federal agency that's in charge of alcohol, drug addiction, mental health. And they had a forward-thinking idea. Ohio was on the cutting edge. Get them out of the hospitals, get them out in the communities. But immediately, they didn't fund it properly. They took some of the savings from closing the hospitals, Kathy referred to, and they sent it back to the general fund. You know, rah-rah general fund, that's great, but it didn't go to the community, or at least not all of it, the way it should have.
You know, some people say that when they talk about doing the same thing to the prison system, putting more emphasis on community corrections, that a lot of the same problem could occur.
Sure.
There just won't be enough money, and people will be out without any any kind of
supervision,
right.
Yeah. It's the same problem here. I mean, we heard stories. I mean, the stories are what made this story. I mean, the stories from people who, you know, try to access services. And to be fair, the system, the community mental health system is serving more people today than it was last year or the year before. The problem is the level of services that they're mm-hmm. getting. Whereas you might have been seeing a counselor, a psychiatrist once a week, once a month, whatever. Now you might wait months and months to see someone, or you might not get in until you do something like try and commit suicide. Rather than, you know, you come in because you're troubled and you want to talk to someone, but we can't see you right now, not until you do something, you know, potentially really harmful to yourself or someone else.
My guests are Alan Johnson and Kathy Kandisky, both reporters for the Columbus Dispatch. On October 24th, they wrote a big package of stories about Ohio's mental health system and how it's just not holding up. When the funding changes occurred in 1988, it hasn't been fully funded since then, and now it's facing huge cuts last year and coming up perhaps in the next two-year state budget. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Are you or somebody you know waiting for help and not getting it because you either don't qualify financially or there just aren't enough people to help you out? You know, those waiting lists, there's people are taking on bigger and bigger caseloads now, too.
Well, the one, we spent some time at Southeast Mental Health Services, which is located downtown. And one of the groups of caseworkers there, they deal with a lot of homeless people and a lot of people with drug and alcohol issues. Their caseloads had been about 20 apiece, and they're now 40. And their supervisor told me that 20 is the ideal caseload for a caseworker, a social worker to handle. They're handling double that now. You know, I mean, the caseworkers are as strained and stressed as the people that are seeking help. Mm-hmm.
So how much was cut? What are we talking about? What's the total funding now at the state level?
I don't know Kathy was our chart maker here. She might be able to answer that. But I know they lost $35 million or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was about I'd have to – I wish I had those numbers right off the top of my head.
They lost a larger –
I love it when I can give you guys a question that you can't
They lost a larger percentage, not dollar-wise, percentage than many other agencies, a fact which even the governor now acknowledges was unfortunate.
Why does mental health get picked on? Why not prisons? Why not other things?
It's part of it is stigma. Part of it is they don't have the loud voice that education does, that the university community does, WOSU. They don't have the lobbyists, the power, the clout, the voice, the people to do it. They're, you know, mentally ill people with stigma attached to it and other, unlike they have NAMI perhaps and others, but they just don't have the power to get in the legislature and kick people around for the money.
When you look at campaign finance reports and look to see who contributes to campaigns, you're going to see a lot of CEOs. You're going to see a lot of hospitals, nursing homes, all kinds of, you know, coal
labor
companies,
unions.
You know, all kinds. You're not going to see mental health services. You're not going to see the advocates for mental health. They don't have money to throw around in the campaigns. And they don't, you know, unfortunately, in this last budget, mental health services, and I think that the governor has acknowledged such since, was cut disproportionately higher than mm-hmm. anything else in the state budget.
And is there anything reason to believe that the next state budget that won't suffer the same consequences? Because there still is nothing much else to cut.
Right.
I think it'll be the same or worse. I think the same forces are at play, whether it's Ted Strickland reelected or John Kasich elected. I think they might be sympathetic. I think they might want to help. But I think they're going to face much the same fate because there's bigger forces at work, unfortunately.
And, you know, it's worth noting both these candidates, both Governor Strickland and John Kasich, both have experience with mental health. Both are familiar with the issues that mm-hmm. are faced by the mentally ill. Both would be considered sympathetic to those issues, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
If you have mental health coverage, you're fine. If you mm-hmm. don't, what are the problems? I mean, if you don't qualify for Medicaid,
that's the problem.
Uninsured. When you're really messed up is when you can't get it either way.
Right. If you have private insurance, you'll get whatever your
Something.
Private insurance will cover. If you don't have that, and you have qualify for Medicaid, you'll get services. Medicaid covers mental health services here in the state of Ohio. But if you don't have those and you're just poor and you show up, chances are you're not going to get services. That's the group of people that have suffered the worst, are those uninsured people that they won't take. Some of the clinics now don't take anybody except Medicaid people because they have to take the Medicaid people. They can't afford to go beyond that.
Well, fact, isn't Southeast the only one that takes non-Medicaid now?
I'd heard that, but I think some of the other clinics do take smaller numbers, but like North
Very
Central
few.
Mental Health Services, for instance, slashed thousands of people off their rolls 2 years ago when they got their funding cut, and it was all non-Medicaid patients.
So when they get their funding, let's talk about the funding stream for a second. How does it come down from the state? Does it go to...
It rains. No,
yeah.
It's...
or how is it not coming down from the state?
It's not
anymore?
Coming down from the state. Well, mental health services, like in Franklin County here, we've got a levy that generates some money for mental health services. Franklin County is one of the fortunate counties. I think most counties do have mental health levies, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
Those funds are then supplemented in large part. Most of it is from state aid. So you have your local funds, you have your state funds, and then there's a small amount of federal funds that come in as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then the county boards, here in Franklin County, we have the Adam H. Board. They distribute those funds through providers like Northeast Mental Health, North Central, all the different clinics and providers that provide the services. That's what they do with the money. So when the money comes up short, like it here is here in Franklin County, for instance, is the first county that has used up all its state aid this year on Medicaid match, paying the state's share of Medicaid, which is, it's not quite half and half, but the federal government pays a portion of Medicaid, the state pays a portion of Medicaid. Franklin County Adam H. has gone through everything already. They still have 6 months
Plus, they spent $4 million of their levy money.
Yep. Plus, they spent local funds. So they've gone to the state and said, we're done. You've got to come up with the money to pay for this the rest of the year. And the state's going to do that.
In all likelihood, because of these big cuts and because more are expected, like the libraries have been going through in the past couple bienniums, the burden could be further pushed to the backs of the local levy.
Right.
Local levies, the people who pay the local taxes.
Right. And that's, you know, it's more fortunate in Franklin County to have that. I don't even know what would happen if we didn't. And some counties don't.
Mm-hmm.
And some counties have been trying over and over again to get them passed, and they don't pass. So, yes, it's really unfortunate. And, you know, the funding part is really important. But as Kathy said earlier, it's the people's stories that really – they break my heart, frankly. I mean, we're not supposed to have hearts, I suppose, in this business.
No,
but
it's not true.
What the heck?
Yeah.
I have one, and it just breaks my heart when we wrote about Adam Knapp, the young man that was in the story, who his parents struggled so hard for so long, 6 years, and they were with him all the way, and he just couldn't get served. You know, the system, he fell through the cracks in the system, and he eventually died in an unfortunate traffic accident, and you know, took some people to the hospital with them, and that didn't have to happen. It just didn't.
And that's somebody who, Adam represents somebody who had parents that were still very involved with trying to help him and trying to get him treatment. Alan and I also visited some group homes where some older men with mental illness lived, and those men had nobody in their lives, no family, nobody that came around to see them. I had one of the group home operators told me that she had a guy that's been there 10 years and has never had one person visit him. She said that several years ago, a woman called asking about him, said she was his sister, asked a few questions. They hung up, never heard from her again, never came, never anything. I mean, a lot of these people have been through problems in their lives that frustrate their family. Their families don't know what to do. Their families get frustrated. And relations get strained, and a lot of these people are just alone. They're by themselves. It's very sad.
Their family abandons them because they can't deal with it. And Adam Knapp's family stuck with him all the way, but that is a rare thing, actually. Mental illness is stigmatized not only by the community at large, but often by inside the family, which is really sad.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back with Alan Johnson and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the story and the issue invoked in the story on October 24th in the Dispatch about the impending or ongoing collapse of the mental health system In Ohio, if you have a question or comment, you can call 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Election 2010 could mean big changes around the country and in Ohio. Join WOSU News Tuesday night beginning at 8 for an NPR News Election Night special, including local updates from the WOSU News team. Listen right here on WOSU 820 or on the web at WOSU.org or follow us on Twitter at WOSU News.
Support for WOSU comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. CCAD offers continuing education classes where you can update your creative career skills. Classes start in January. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
45 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunny skies today, a high of 51. Clear skies tonight, a low of 30 degrees. Sunny for Tuesday and a high of 51. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are Kathy Kandisky and Alan Johnson. They wrote that story in the Dispatch on October 24th about the impending collapse of Ohio's mental health care system. If you have a question or comment, do you know anybody who is struggling, who's falling through those cracks, give us a call and tell us that story, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email now from Pam. I am a physician who has observed in my 20 years in Ohio many of our mentally ill brothers and sisters. I have often wondered why, in closing the state institutions, there was never enough funding, resources, or attention given to this group of unfortunate individuals. Is it because of rising health care costs, unwillingness of politicians to raise taxes, lack of effective, compassionate oversight? Couldn't all the money being spent on the homeless, mentally ill, thought to be at least 40% of that population, and our mentally ill prisoners be better and more compassionately spent on their medical needs? And that does raise that we mentioned earlier, it's they're either in nursing homes, severely mentally ill people who are not getting treated properly, on the streets, or in our prisons. And there's a large percentage in the nursing homes who are there because they're mentally ill.
Well, and they're people who are in their 30s and their 40s. They don't have a physical disability to require them to be in a nursing home, but they're there because a bed was available. And there's lots of beds available in prison, even though it's crowded, and that's where a lot of them end up. There's thousands and thousands of prisoners who have mental illness, and it's
which is the source of their trouble.
Right.
It's clearly
right
why they're there.
And I think it was on public television. There was a couple specials about the new asylums, where they referred to prisons as the new mental illness asylums, because a lot of times they end up there. There's nowhere for them to go. They commit a crime, they're in prison.
The prison folks will tell you, though, that a lot of them are there for short terms,
right.
So it's not enough time to even if they could give them the adequate care, mm-hmm. They're not there long enough to benefit from
it. It's interesting. The prisons are spending, like Franklin County Sheriff's Department that runs the jails here in Franklin County, spends about $1 million a year on medications for mental illness. So they do try, once they get people in, to get them back on their meds. Most of the people, the mentally ill folks that come into the Franklin County jail system, have contact with the mental health system. They're just not getting services. Now, it may be they've tried to get services and can't get it. It may be they're choosing not to take their medication. I mean, that's a problem too. So, but they're known to the system. But they end up in the jail, and the jail tries to stabilize them. They get them their meds, but then they get released eventually, and they'll tell you down at the jail that they get a lot of people in and out.
What was
they
the know frequent
because
flyer?
Of the sentencing. Yeah,
there was one guy who's been in there like more than a dozen, maybe 19 times in the last 2 years. They see him all the time. They know what to do when he gets there. I guess that's a good thing.
The issue of mental illness crosses all socioeconomic lines. There's no guarantee because you're rich or because you have money or even a health insurance policy that you're not going to get be struck someone in your family, and that it may not do everything you need to be done, and it may end up costing people their jobs down the line. Why is it that that lobby for mental health is so weak when mental illness and mental health affects everybody?
I really don't know. I'm going to go back to the argument of stigma because, you know, I've been in therapy myself a few times. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And I had health care coverage. I had insurance, and it paid for it. A lot of people don't have that. But even at that, a lot of people don't want to admit it. They don't want to say, I had to go to a counselor or I needed hospitalization. Even in a lot of the emails and letters we've got, people said, well, I had this problem or my family did, but please don't use my name. And I think that is the heart of it. It's not like Parkinson's disease or cancer or diabetes or any of the other physical diseases. It's not even like mental retardation where you can often see the results. It's something else that has a stigma attached to it. People don't want to admit it. And because they don't want to admit it, it's hard to coalesce around that cause.
Well, obviously it's a physical disease because it's often, and some people say too often now, treated with medication.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is definitely a disease. It's not like I choose to be mentally ill or I choose to go live in the woods outside Nationwide Arena.
And it was the increased use of medication ultimately that kind of led in 1988 to the belief that a lot of folks could be treated in community settings because medication had come so far that with proper medication, just there was a lot more hope for these folks and a lot better lives that they could live in the community.
But if they're not getting the medication, one, and if they're not being monitored properly to make sure they're taking the medication,
it doesn't
make any difference.
Yeah.
Sure.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Alan Johnson and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. And Charlotte, you're on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
And just by way of preface, my childhood best friend had two parents who were refugees from the Nazis, and they were both psychiatric social workers. And they're tremendously decent people, and they've guided my life in a lot of ways. But my question is, on the eve of this election day, and if I get one more robocall, I've got a list of people I'm going to vote against.
Certifiable,
by
huh?
Robocall.
Yeah. Right.
How much money are we spending in this society on all these attack ads and all these campaigns and all these posters, and how does that stack up to the shortfall in mental health, and where are our priorities as a community that the only growth industry we've got in this economy is political hackdom?
Well, I have the billions and billions spent on political ads. I can't say, Charlotte.
Easily serve. I think since the last 2 years, about $100 million has been cut out of mental health services in Ohio. So,
in other words, probably in Ohio by this campaign cycle is over, between all the gray money that's going around off the books and the official money, we could have filled that hole with
several
others.
Easily. Absolutely. I mean, the governor's race alone is going to be what?
A record breaker.
30 million or more, plus mm-hmm. all the others. Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so that says a lot about our priorities as a society, gentlemen, and you've just helped me make my decision for tomorrow.
Okay. Show what? There's two females and one guy in there.
Sorry. Well, ladies and gentlemen, all.
Some people think I sound like a guy, but
yeah,
hey, Charlotte,
I'm working a night shift these days, and I haven't had my second cup of coffee yet. I apologize.
Thanks for your call, Charlotte.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. 614-292-8513. We have an email from Mary B. Rolato. She's the Director of Marketing and Development for Mental Health America of Franklin County. Our job at Mental Health America of Franklin County is to help navigate people through the mental health maze. At one time, we were able to successfully refer people to agencies that provide direct services, and now these agencies are telling people to call us back because they cannot help. Agencies are now referring people to our free support groups. Please let your listeners know about our free support groups. There is help and hope. Four depression support groups meet each month. Four families in touch group meets each month for adults with adult family members with mental illness. Four Schizophrenics Anonymous meets each month. You can go to MHAFrank.org. to get more information about that, and we'll post that on our website as well at WOSU.org. Thank you, Mary, very much for that email. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513. And, Pat, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I had a child who was diagnosed as bipolar, and I had more trouble trying to find help for her and, you know, all the problems they have, and she tried to commit suicide a couple times, and that was about the only time that I could get her into a facility that needed, and she finally, she's 22 now, and she's gotten over a lot of her problems, but she's still on some medication. But it was a nightmare trying to figure out how to get, you know, get her help and work through the systems. But it was a, there's kind of a blessing in disguise because she taught me an awful lot about patients and also an awful lot about how to deal with the governments and the various hospitals and the everything like that, because I learned an awful lot just from doing that. But I can understand if anybody has a problem like that, how difficult it is. And I do think they need additional funding for the hospital so they can take just more than Medicaid patients.
You told our screener, Bill, that you think that support is weak for mental health funding because it doesn't make any money.
Yeah, I mean, I think they need more money to help fund the hospitals and stuff like that. And also, one thing, if they want to cut the budget, one of the ladies didn't mention was the public employees union. And the public employees, they could just tell all the public employees in the state and local, hey, look, you know, you're not going to get an increase for the next 10 years. And in fact, we're going to cut your salaries 10% because we need to fund other things. Instead, they say, you know, well, we got to cut this, we got to cut that.
Okay.
So they're, all the politicians are afraid to attack or, you know, to take on the unions. And that's where I think one of the biggest problems is in trying to get funding for these various programs.
Okay.
Could I ask you real quickly, how long did it take before you actually got good, solid service for your child?
It took about 2 years before I finally understood the whole thing and how to do it. And, you know, taking her to the emergency room and stuff like that and dealing with that, you know, down to OSU or, you know, to the other hospitals. Finally, we had her committed down at the what used to be the old Mercy Hospital.
Well, thanks for sticking with her.
Yeah, and it was a lot of work, and I can feel sympathy for an awful lot of people that are going through that.
Okay. What strikes me about what Pat said was just that, you know, it took him 2 years to figure out how to navigate the system and get his child help. What if you don't have someone helping you to navigate
right.
the system?
And what if you don't have 2 years?
Right. Thank you, Pat, for your call. I mixed up Pat's call with another person's call. Somebody else had called in and said that they think it's not funded properly because it doesn't generate anything for anybody else, but I guess that might...
Well, it goes back to the email you got earlier about, is this the most cost-efficient way? You know, even if you don't really, without even talking about the humanity here, just talking about the dollars, it does not make sense to put someone in prison, and Alan probably knows what that costs a day, to house someone in a jail or a prison when you could be providing them with counseling once a week and medication.
And they could possibly be working and earning an income and that kind of a thing.
There's all kinds of cost efficiencies you could talk about.
Is there anything in the health care reform at the federal level that addresses these shortfalls?
Well, there's the federal health care bill will expand the Medicaid eligibility to considerably, and I think that they project about 500,000 more Ohioans are going to qualify for Medicaid under the expanded eligibility. A good portion of those folks are going to be, they project, will be receiving mental health services. So those would be people who are uninsured now, primarily, who will get Medicaid coverage, and with that will be eligible for mental health services.
And you're talking about the cost. One of the graphics we had showed the cost per type of facility. Starting at the top end, it was state psychiatric hospitals, daily cost, $589. Nursing homes, $176. Prisons, $66. A group home, as we talked about earlier, $27. Community-based services, $5.68.
That's the daily cost.
Daily cost. So I don't even, my math is horrible.
So we're cutting off our nose to spite our face is a society.
In a lot of situations, I mean, not everybody can benefit from just community, you know, from community services, but a lot
some
of people
need the hospital, certainly, yeah. But most don't.
Yeah.
Okay, 614-292-8513. Paul, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Ann, an honored guest. Good morning. A question about the pharmaceutical aspect of this. I mean, I have plenty of other questions, but we are bombarded in television, in print ads, magazines, you know, newspapers, what have you, with the latest, the greatest. If your something-something doesn't work, well, then add something-something to it. I'm not going to there's no need to name names, but obviously this is done at spectacular cost. Now, and I understand very well the cost of developing some of these drugs, but my question is, when it boils right down to somebody who has no money, I mean, literally, they're unemployed, they're mentally ill, they, let's say they could even approach services from whatever angle, insured or not, fine. I understand the issue of compliance is very, very difficult in extreme cases. But I think many people simply have no way to acquire the medication. And I'd be happy to just hear some discussion about that. What, and by your accounts, maybe $25,000 a year spent on, you know, prison.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, you know, there simply aren't psychiatric facilities unless you commit some horrible crime or try to kill yourself, and then it's for like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I just would like to know what the pharmaceutical industry and our structure in terms of the free market, yeah, et cetera. Okay, well, yeah. I've said enough.
No, that's okay, Paul, but you bring up a good issue that was – thanks, Paul, for your call. I appreciate it. When I heard a lady speak a couple weeks ago at the TEDx Columbus event, and she made the point that there's so much emphasis on medication that it was conceived as a panacea, and that, in fact, a lot of mental illnesses, actually, some do, some don't, they still need a lot of therapy. They need a lot of care and oversight. Drugs won't cure it all. But so the drug companies keep pushing the drugs. And we have an email here from Mike in Worthington. He writes, Pfizer has done a remarkable job of bringing erectile dysfunction out of the closet to the point that many people discuss it openly. Mental health could benefit from a similar PR campaign in order to destigmatize it.
Right. And the thing that about the drugs is a lot of the drugs that are being pushed are for depression, mainly, not exclusively. The ones that are really important that are really working are a new generation of antipsychotics, and those are the ones that help the people really a lot. I'm not a shill for the drug companies, don't get me wrong, but they have done a really good job with antipsychotics. It's getting the drugs to the people and, as the gentleman said, compliance, getting them to take them. But they can be controlled in a way that never could have been done before.
We have to take another break already. So if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air.
I've been over this 100 times about my anger at my father for walking out and my mother's suicide when I was 17. My need to save people as a result.
Gabriel Byrne is back for a third season of HBO's In Treatment with new patients and a new therapist. We talk with writers Dan Futterman and Anya Epstein. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU TV, join Nova as they explore how elevators work, whether they are safe, and why so many people are afraid of them. Watch Nova Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU TV.
Support for WOSU comes from Columbus School for Girls. Information about curriculum in an all-girl environment is available at their admission open house, offering tours and meet and greets with faculty and students. Sunday, November 7th at 1 p.m. More at columbusschoolforgirls.org.
Join WOSU Public Media and the Refectory for our first-ever Chefs in the City wine tasting. Friday, November 19th at 5:30 p.m., guests will sample hand-selected wines and taste exclusive creations. You'll also be a part of a special WOSU TV production. A limited number of tickets are on sale now at wosu.org/chefs. Sunny skies today, a high right around 51 degrees, clear skies tonight, and a low of 30. All Sides continues on WOSU.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the state of mental health care in the state of Ohio. My guests are Alan Johnson and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. They've written about this in detail. How does Ohio stack up?
Well, we are the most recent grade we got, I think, was a C grade out of like the letter grade. We were a B, reaching toward an A a few years ago, and then the funding cuts took us down. So we're in the middle of the pack. We're
and
not
that,
the worst.
That was a grade from a national mental health advocacy group. And Ohio, just in this last budget, was among the top 10 states for state cuts to mental health services.
Well, here's one that might be more telling. It was a person that didn't make the story. Unfortunately, we had a lot of those. She'd been in the system since the 70s, and the system back in those days, she said, was a 4. She gave it a 4 out of a 10. Then we started improving, getting a little bit better. She said it was a 7. She said now it's a 2. So this is someone who was in the system before, is in the system now. The system is worse than it was when we had state hospitals, in her opinion.
You know, we talk about community care, and a lot of that often involves group homes because people need a place to live, and they need a safe place to live where people understand them. But it's not easy to open up a group home, even if it were and is inexpensive to run them compared to the alternatives. People who do run them don't make a lot of money, and a lot of times communities don't want these group homes in their towns and in their neighborhoods. There was a big thing about it in Gahanna last spring.
People don't want it. People are afraid of what they don't know. You know, I'd never been to a group home for mentally ill people before this story, so I didn't know what to expect. And I visited a group home up on Sunbury Road that was operated by a sweet, sweet lady in her 70s. She won't let me tell you how old she is, but she's old. And the only reason I think it's important is that she's up in her 70s caring for about 6 or 7 men, cooking and cleaning and taking care of them. And this lady seems to have no trouble whatsoever with these guys. And everybody seems to be getting what they need and happy, and they've got somebody paying attention to them.
But she can barely afford to do it anymore.
She gets by. She owned a home. I mean, she kind of had everything there to set it up. But you're right. I'm trying to think what she gets paid a day.
$27. $27 a day.
But she's up in the morning fixing breakfast. She does lunch. I mean, she's cooking all day for these folks and taking care of them. And the services is that, when somebody's not feeling well, she knows. She calls a caseworker. She calls a social worker.
She can get somebody to the hospital.
She sees the pattern. You know, she pays attention to these folks. She knows their names. This particular one we were at, I was kind of impressed because they had a very large garden in the back that, according to her, they all tended to, and they all ate from, and they took care of their garden, and they had some meals from it. It just seemed like it
worked
out well.
Those homes are falling by the wayside, though. About I think half of them have disappeared in the last 10 years. They just can't cut it. There's not enough money from the government coming through those community services to make that lady, well, she may make it, but she may not. Others, they lose one or two people. If they can't replace them, they go under.
And those people go to the streets. They go to the nursing homes.
If they're lucky, they go to another home.
From,
but, yeah. I mean, it's And these are some of the most fragile people you'll ever meet. I mean, they're nice people, but they're just fragile, and they don't. This lady may be the only person they have to talk to. I mean, that may be it in the world.
She told me a story about a person that she had there several years ago that became ill, took to the hospital, wasn't feeling well. She called a relative who was out of town. The relative couldn't get back, and she visited him daily until he passed away, and no one came to see him. It's really kind of sad.
Rick, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank the reporters in Dispatch for putting these issues on the front page. I was a mental health nurse for 30 years, recently retired. My comment is about the antipsychotics. My experience was that the new generation of antipsychotics didn't live up to the billing that the pharmaceutical companies had presented. They were supposed to be more effective with fewer side effects. Some of them, the stronger ones who actually were more helpful for psychiatric symptoms, have serious metabolic side effects, including severe weight gain and diabetes, and most of those effects are irreversible. So to some extent, the previous generation, despite the neurological problems that they caused, like tardive dyskinesia, were just as effective. That's speaking from my experience, and most of the other information that comes out, I believe, comes from research that's sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies, unfortunately. This country doesn't work like Europe, where the studies are sponsored by the government. And some of the Abilify, in particular, we were talking about antidepressants on television. The one I see most recently is Abilify, which was originally marketed as an antipsychotic and now has been approved for depression. But as far as I'm concerned, its effectiveness is yet to be seen. And I think it's often true that the pharmaceutical companies will find new supposed uses for drugs for marketing purposes as much as for anything else.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot.
Okay, and thank you again for covering the subject. It's much needed.
Okay. Take care. 614-292-8513. And Mary, you're on the air with Kathy Kandisky and Alan Johnson of the Dispatch. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Mary.
Hi. Thank you, Anne. And I want to just tailgate on what this gentleman before me said. Thank you to the Dispatch and for you. This is advertising that we cannot afford to do as families of people with mental illness. I want to say that NAMI is a lifesaver. It was for my family, and it is for those that I meet every day. I'm a teacher of their family-to-family class, and I just urge anyone who's listening who has a loved one with mental illness to please call the NAMI office, 501-6264, and find out about the family-to-family class. I also have a website that was given to me for my son's medication, and it is northwestpharmacy.com. And my son is currently on 6 different medications. He's in recovery. He's doing great. But he was able to get a generic for a drug that he was taking that was costing him $400 a month.
Wow.
He's now getting 6 months worth of medication in the generic form, which works very well for him.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always, but it does, for $200. So this may be very helpful, and it was given to me by his psychiatrist, whom I respect
okay.
immeasurably.
That's spelled out Northwest Pharmacy?
NorthwestPharmacy.com.
And then what was the number? That NAMI, for folks who might not know, is the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
That's right. And the Franklin County number is 501 6-4.
Okay.
And they can get all kinds of information on when the classes are, and that is the best thing families can do, get mm-hmm. into those classes, mm-hmm. because we all feel so alone.
Right. Well, thank you, Mary.
Thank you
thanks
so much.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. And Stephanie, you're on the air. You wonder about group funding or funding for group homes.
Yes, I had a comment about funding for group homes. You had mentioned earlier that the significant cost for people that are in prisons or in nursing homes. Why isn't there more funding for group homes, since that's a more economical solution versus putting someone either in a nursing home or in prison? How can we increase funding and really kind of reverse that to go to more nursing for group homes?
That's the $64,000 question.
It defies logic, you know. I mean, it defies logic. And until the legislature and the folks that are in charge of enacting the budget kind of put it together and get it themselves, that's kind of what has to happen. I mean, somebody needs to explain, needs to show, needs to keep pounding and lobbying for money for group homes, because you're right, it's about a third of the daily cost than what prison is. So, I mean, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
That would require intelligent, logical decision making in government,
and so we don't stop it, Stephanie.
We don't have a lot of that. We don't allow it in government.
So just stop that right now. Okay. Thanks for your call, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Nellie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. When people are in the psychiatric ward and they want to get out, and the hospital is saying no, they petition the court, and a magistrate or referee decides with them or with the hospital. And we have a situation now in which one of our candidates for the Supreme Court Justice is Maureen O'Connor, who decided 97% of the time in favor of the hospital and has a history in general of siding with drug companies and utilities if they have given her money. And so we have a chance to remove her from office tomorrow.
Okay. Nellie? We're not going to get into the politics because it's not fair.
Well, I have one other thing to say then.
Well, you know what? I've got a bunch of other people waiting. So thanks for your call, Nellie.
Okay.
Take care and thanks for listening. 614-292-8513. And Leslie, you're on the air with Kathy Kandisky and Alan Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I am an angry, frustrated parent. I'm in my 60s. My son is diagnosed with schizophrenia. He has services through one of the mental health centers, and the services are lacking. He never sees a case manager. He doesn't have someone. If something happens, no one comes to his home. If it wasn't for his dad and I, he would be homeless. We bought a house for him to live in. We see that he gets to the doctor. We see that he gets medications picked up. And I know that there are other agencies, departments within Ohio that provide services to people with disabilities, and those services are rendered far more effectively than the services rendered to people with mental illness.
That's a classic example, right?
Yeah, it is, and it's the main headline on our story from a couple weeks ago was an illusion of treatment, and we didn't make that up. That came from the folks who run the county boards. It's an illusion because technically your son is getting treatment. They can count him as a number being treated, but he's not really getting the treatment he needs. It's an illusion, and I sympathize with you, and again, thank you for being a good parent to stick with him and do all you're doing for him, but it is just an illusion to say he's getting treated. Clearly he's not.
So don't be fooled by the numbers. Leslie, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have a few more minutes. Let's see if we can get to all the calls. Anna, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Anna.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry. There was an interruption.
Okay.
I really think your topic is a community service. I am a certified a psychiatric nurse, and in my experience, it seems as though the hospitals are treating the most ill of the mental health population, yet in the state system, the doctors are pressured to give minimal amounts of medication, just barely enough to sustain the person. And I found that across the board. In addition, well, let's see. I guess we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. All
Thank
right.
you very much.
Thanks, Anna. Mm-hmm. Let's see, 614-292-8513, but we're running out of time. And, Mike, you volunteer at a suicide hotline. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I am a volunteer down there for a number of years. But I think, you know, I talk to people, and I almost feel like a hypocrite saying, listen, you can get therapy. It works. But I understand the only way to really get into the kind of the system is if you have health insurance, which many people don't that I talk to. And aside from like in a crisis event where they actually find themselves down at Netcare or they're in an emergency room or the cops are involved or something, but just to show up at North Central Mental Health, they're not taking new patients for the kind of the people that aren't necessarily they're not necessarily suicidal, but they certainly have the signs of depression but there's just no care.
Mm-hmm. What do you see with the economy? I'm curious on, you know, the types of people that you're hearing from, because we heard a lot that, you know, there's a growing need, and a lot of it's stemming from, you know, job loss and troubles specific with the recession.
Well, I tell you, when people ask, you know, how many calls, there's just like no norm, I don't think, mm-hmm. and there's no real pattern. But we are having a special lookout for veterans. That's mm-hmm. probably the next big thing that's going to be happening. Mm-hmm. And it's really just the basic stuff. Well, first of all, I think if you're going to be in a mental illness situation, Central Ohio is a real good place to be, as opposed to the outlying areas, the other counties further away from Columbus. There's Netcare and support groups and that. But I think the major issue is the funding. People say they could look at what it costs, but without it, it's hard to tell the true cost if they don't get treatment.
Well, it's hard for you. I mean, you got a hard job because you're trying to give people hope, and the services aren't always there to back it up. It's tough.
Real quickly, I think mainly you can get into the system if you actually try and kill yourself now, sad as that is.
Mm-hmm.
Being really depressed doesn't really work anymore.
Mike, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. We have an email now. I want to read it real quickly from Trudy Sharp. She's Communications Director for the Ohio Department of Mental Health. She writes, a couple of callers mentioned the difficulty in getting help for their children with mental illness. I thought the following information might be helpful. To address a shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists in Ohio, the Ohio Department of Mental Health and provider organizations across the state recently launched the Pediatric Psychiatry Network, a consultation and support service for primary care physicians. To request a consultation, Ohio primary care physicians may call 1-877-PSY-OHIO or complete a request form at pedpsychiatry.org. This is for doctors to call. Parents can tell their doctor to talk to the network. We'll post all of those. Thanks to Kathy and Alan Johnson. Kathy Kandisky and Alan Johnson, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.